Walter and Fonzie have quit the Muppets.
Wait, you can quit the Muppets?
Hello, world. This is Chris Abalo's podcast experiment, and I am Chris Abalo. Welcome to the show, where I am joined by just one person on this show. That's right. Please welcome back Christian Cordes.
What's up, man? What's going on?
Well, we're about to get really, really nerdy. That's what's going on.
This is... Ooh, you guys are in for it.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. They're like, we're finally getting a new show. I mean, every show is new, but they're like, all right, we're getting
a new episode.
It's Chris and somebody else, and it's going to be about
the Muppets. This.
Yep.
Which, for nothing, that shouldn't be anyone's reaction when you hear someone's talking about
it. It totally
Muppets.
Shouldn't. It's kind of weird that people will have a weird, like when they find out I'm into Muppets, like, oh.
I can understand if you're afraid of puppets and don't like the Muppets. That I can get. But like to just not like them doesn't make sense.
But none of the Muppets look like Annabelle, so I really don't know how it's like, I'm afraid of puppets, man.
Well,
like, that's kind of weird.
I think people just naturally, well, when I was a kid, I was, for example, I'm also a big Thomas fan. So when I was
a kid,
I used to be very afraid of the face. But then I grew out of it. I loved the show. So I can understand why some people don't like it because it's inanimate objects talking.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
So I can understand why some people don't like it. However, I love these characters so fucking much that it still baffles me.
It's kind of weird when people... It's one of those things where... Maybe this is how Star Wars fans feel. We're like, how can you not love this so much with all
Which
your heart and soul?
Which is crazy because I also understand that because I love Star Wars. But like with the Muppets, yeah, people tend to have the reaction of like, oh... Okay, like it's this weird thing, like a magical space opera isn't the next fucking weirdest thing. Like,
yeah,
you know what I mean? Like I get like people look at you like you've got two fucking heads, which there's Muppets of that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's like I'm a Muppet with two heads. But it's kind of weird. I don't look at it as being so out there as I would give someone a far funnier look and reaction if they were like, oh, I've seen every Fast and Furious movie in the theater. Like I would be way more judgy of that.
Yeah,
and should be. Compared
but I, but
to loving
thing, I like,
Muppets.
I like Fast and Furious. I haven't seen everyone in the theater. I just enjoy them.
No, but
movies.
I'm saying there's clearly like
they're great popcorn flicks.
And that's fine.
Yeah.
But that's why I'm thinking like, really, you're taking something that's like completely ridiculous and you're like somehow me liking puppets.
I'll ask you this.
That
would you go see Fast and Furious 10, which is the next one, if it was called
Fast
10
Your Seatbelts? I mean, yes, because you would have written it.
Yeah.
So absolutely, I'm going.
I've pitched you my fucking.
You did
my Fast and Furious movie, haven't I?
I mean,
my Fast 10-year seatbelts. What it would be? It'd be a.
Go ahead.
It would be a. I mean, be a heist.
Give me the exclusive.
It'd be a heist film of the Peterson Auto Museum. So it's all movie cars.
Oh, dude, that is pretty great.
But then Tyrese Gibson will get stuck with the Ecto-1 and be like, "This car's a piece of shit."
That actually fits. I've never seen one of those movies, but just what I've gleaned from the trailers,
and then
that
I
sounds
would,
like it fits.
Right, and then I would find it hilarious that Vin Diesel ends up being the one who drives Herbie, because Herbie, the one from Herbie Fully Loaded, is in that museum, but it's the NASCAR variant. So he gets stuck with this little Beetle, and he's like, what the fuck, why do I get the Volkswagen? Starts it up, and it just fucking shatters glass, and he's like, oh.
Oh, it has a NOS tank on it.
But yeah, that's my Fasten Your Seatbelts pitch. They have to hijack the Peterson Auto Museum.
I mean, Herbie Fast and Furious, I'm in for that as well. Like, if they want to do...
You know they were actually going to do that not too long ago?
Really?
There was a show that was in development called Fastlane that was part of Disney Channel.
Okay.
And I followed this because I'm also a Herbie fan. I love... vehicles in Hollywood for whatever reason. I always like cars, so I guess I had that kind of association.
Okay.
But originally, we were going to get a new Herbie miniseries on Disney Channel that was called Fastlane, and it was literally, from what I had gathered, a Fast and Furious type movie for kids with Herbie in it. And I was so for that. Because doesn't that just sound awful?
It kind of does.
It sounds like in the best way possible. Like that. Like
we're gonna make Knight Rider for Disney Channel. That's what it sounds like.
Like that. But that's the joke. That's what they ended up doing.
Oh yeah.
I'm not even kidding. Fastlane ended up. So they ended up scrapping the Herbie element because apparently someone at Disney was like, "Who the fuck gives a shit about Herbie?" I was like, "That's fair."
Yeah, that's fair.
That's fair. I love those movies. 40 years. Like it's been a long time. Lindsay Lohan don't have that kind of push no more.
Yeah.
I mean, she does in the veins, but.
Wow. Hot take.
I'm so sorry. That was so fucked up.
I mean, you're not.
She's
in Ibiza living the life right now. She could give a shit what you say about her. Let's put it that way.
So they took the Herbie element out of it and they developed Fastlane, which, as you said, is literally Knight Rider for children. The car had artificial intelligence. It was silly and zany. Mm. One line, like it's actually kind of fun. It's a fun ride because I wanted to see like how it went from that to that.
Mm.
And then I was just like, oh, I could see how this could have been a Herbie thing, but I'm glad it wasn't.
Right.
The car had AI.
See, that'd be a more strange and random poll telling people that you're a fan of the Herbie movies as opposed to a fan of the Muppets, who are kind of, the Muppets are evergreen. Herbie is of its time.
Yeah.
I'll say that. The Muppets are definitely evergreen, which, to kind of get back on that, love to talk about theoretical Fast and Furious and Herbie movies, we could do an hour on that, but we billboarded something else, so we're going to get back to the Muppets.
Trust me, I actually had a way back into it.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, I was done, but I was just like, because vehicles, and then it brought me back to like thinking about all the Muppet movies, because again, we were actually talking a lot about the Muppets before the show started, because of course we did, and my love of cars comes from the Muppets, so because of that, I was then shown the Love Bug as a kid, and then that led to just kind of a fascination with movie cars because I think they're this unsung element to those vehicles that you don't really see many in movies anymore, the hero car. Not like where the car is like a Herbie where it has a personality like Christine.
No, but the car is a character.
Exactly.
I mean, the Ecto-1 is a character. The DeLorean is a character.
100%. Like for Ghostbusters fans, how hype were you when you saw the Ecto-1, the original, in Afterlife trailer?
Totally.
That was amazing. If they did the same thing somehow with Fozzie Studebaker, if they did a new Muppet movie and somehow that car came back, I guarantee you people would be happy.
Oh, yeah.
Because they'd be like, God. Because when you think of a Studebaker, you're like a bear that's in his natural habitat.
Yes, that's probably the only time I've seen a Studebaker is on screen in the Muppet movie.
Exactly. I can't think of another
time. That was before my time.
I can't think of another time a Studebaker has been like, that. It's been that car for somebody.
Totally.
And which is funny because after that movie is The Mask and Stanley Ipkiss actually drives the same fucking Studebaker.
Wait, the one that was used in the Muppet movie?
No. The same two-door dirt brown coupe. And you couldn't tell five-year-old me that wasn't the same car. And I was like, yo, Fozzie lent your Studebaker to the Mask.
In your fan fiction, you're like, this is the same world. I know it is. I know what it is.
Yeah, because of that, Muppets started like just this fat, like, it's a small offshoot. Muppets highlighted a bunch of amazing things for me. But Cars was one of them. And that's why I know a lot about like Herbie and Christine and those type of heroic cars, because I think that's a fascinating part of Hollywood is the hero vehicle.
Yeah.
And the Muppets to me is like prime example of that. Like we're having hero cars in movies. Like, come on.
Yeah. You're right. The vehicles are very much a part of, you know, whether it's the Electric Mayhem bus or the Happiness Hotel bus. And Fozzie Studebaker. I mean, there are so many. There are a lot.
And that's not where the first fascination of the Muppets came from. I was a Sesame Street kid. So I was raised on that because my dad had a pretty awful experience at Disney.
Okay.
And I'll tell that to you after the show, but it's horrendous. So I was raised non-Disney movies and shows for the very early part of my life.
Interesting.
So I watched a lot of Sesame Street. So like very PBS
Right, PBS-centric.
Yeah. So Sesame Street, I was like, what are these really cool creatures? Like this was – and I don't remember the first piece of Muppet media that I watched, but I know for sure it was Sesame Street only because as a kid I had a security count. Like you know how some kids have like the security blanket – I had a little Count doll that I brought to preschool. And like, there's a story.
That is so goddamn adorable. It's unreal.
So my one time I lost it at preschool, and at preschool they had the fucking mulch ground. My mom, who I get goosebumps because I love
this. I'm looking at this. Wow, you really? He's got goosebumps, everybody. Pyloerections all over the place.
Don't say that about a story.
I'm sorry,
while
you're talking about your mom. Oops.
But she went back and she got it for me, and she found it. And I guess the Muppets at that point in my life had meant that much to me,
mm-hmm.
the Count and all that.
Right.
That she did that. And that to me was, even now looking back, like, oh my God, that I love these world and these characters that much and that people know.
Is it weird that I'm picturing you in preschool the same exact height you are now? Because all I could think of is like,
Christian. I mean, the hair's not far off, to be honest with you.
You were the big kid, right?
No, I was a little below average height. I was kind of a short kid. I didn't become, which is really funny, I didn't become tall until like a little at the tail end of high school and then afterwards.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's funny.
Which is like, I was about average height for most people. I was kind of tall a little bit, but not like, what the fuck?
Not 6'5" for anybody who doesn't have a point of reference.
6'4", but like, I'm a big dude. That's the bigness from that side. This side is a little later in the game. But yeah, it was, I love these characters from a very early age. And then my mom and my dad eventually introduced me to the core Muppets because I loved Kermit the Frog. And they were like, you know, Kermit's got a whole slew of friends outside of Sesame Street. And I was like, what? What you mean? What do you mean outside of Sesame Street? There's no other world outside of the Muppet Show. So I was introduced from that to the Muppet Show. And those characters, to this day, is when I think of comedy, it's the Muppets. Like for some, it's Monty Python. For others, it's other references. It's other comedians and stuff like that. But for me, it still holds up. Is Muppets brand level of humor. It's so clean cut and dry, but also at the same time filthy, hilarious, heartfelt. Just it's everything I would like.
Yeah.
And not being mean about it. And if it is mean, it's toward the person telling the joke.
Exactly. The person's their own victim.
Yeah, exactly.
It's their own foil. Yeah.
Fozzie.
Yeah. I was thinking about this. I had a conversation about this kind of recently with somebody and asking just about, you know, doing a show and being funny and writing and all that stuff. And I said, I can get my sense of humor down to 5 people.
Was he a guest on The Muppets?
I mean, I love John Cleese as a writer, but that came later. Like,
that's
Python,
one of the best episodes ever did.
John Cleese, Julie Andrews, Vincent Price. Like, there are a couple that are just like
standouts.
Perfect. Yeah, absolutely. But
Johnny Cash.
Yeah, that was really solid too. You can get like 10 that are really like, no, you have to watch these because they're really just that great. Like, it was such a perfect fit.
The one that I watched the most, hands down, as a kid. And I remember this specifically because by the time I was an early teenager, I was just going into like middle school. My dad was starting to get really sick and his health was not doing great. And I remember going to a hospital that was kind of far to go see him. And we had like a VHS player in the car, like a mini one. And the one episode that we would watch all the time was the Harry Belafonte one.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that song.
Like
that performance, the puppets and everything. That's what's so amazing about what they would do for the guests and the stuff they would make week to week it's stunning. It really, really is. And that's why
it was stunning, but also expensive.
Oh my God.
The Muppets Show was one of the most expensive shows on television at the time.
Yeah.
Now it's laughable because it's like, oh, they spent that much. That's
right.
Nothing.
But late 70s scale, forget it.
Yeah.
It was
a lot.
Yeah.
So I think that's also why Jim was able to get a lot of freedom too. Cause when you're spending that much money, you better be all in on somebody's vision. And it shows. And what's wonderful too about the Muppet Show, and especially with the Harry Belafonte number, especially with Turn the World Around, is that when you hear that song, you're like, oh, it's just a cool number with the Muppet characters. But then years later, Jim had it performed at his memorial service. Harry Belafonte performed it. Yeah. And they talked about what it had meant and how subliminally, even through their humor and how they acted, the Muppets taught. Like, that was what was cool about the Muppets more so than Sesame Street. Yeah, Sesame Street definitely educated. They hammered that shit in wonderfully, but it was obvious.
Yes.
With the Muppets, it was kind of like secondhand. You didn't realize it.
It was subtle.
Yeah, exactly.
It was snuck in there. That's but it wasn't like the overriding theme was to educate. Like, whereas Sesame Street was an educational show.
Yeah.
And a show to teach you, to educate you and give you a perspective on morality as well.
Yeah.
And just being a good person.
I think better
shows
people
more discreet.
I think you're, I do believe that when you watch Sesame Street as a kid, you're better off in the long run.
It's hard to imagine anybody who didn't. That's the weird thing, because everybody did and has. And I feel like there's a point when everybody admits it when they're an adult. Like, oh, I love Sesame Street as a kid. But there's that faith. Maybe it's part of being an adolescent where you just deny everything from your childhood.
We'll see that, honestly, in a couple of years, because Sesame Street is also about to have their third feature film that's about to shoot in New York.
Really?
I'm really, really hyped for this movie, too, because it sounds like what I've wanted in a Sesame Street movie for a very long time. Now, here's the one thing I want to get across from the jump. I'm a huge Muppet fan, but it's not my whole identity. I just realize, right, and I'm aware enough that I could be like, hey, this is where my influences come from, and I appreciate these characters that much, and I care about the artistry, and like, I think the on-screen Muppets are one of the coolest things in the world. The behind-the-scenes aspect is sometimes even cooler to me.
Oh, God, yeah.
I love seeing how all that stuff came together. Because when I was a kid, they didn't really have many behind-the-scenes material for the Muppets. Or at least some that I could easily access, because I didn't really have full access to the internet for a very long time. My phone didn't go on the internet all that much. Like, my first phone, no. And
my first phone was from AAA, so it definitely didn't. It barely made calls, so there was no internet.
I'm trying to remember what it was that I first saw of like behind the scenes Muppets, but when I did, it was incredible.
Yeah.
When I realized, I was like, these people did this for a job. Yeah. And like, they had fun doing, like, there's an amazing documentary on YouTube called Of Muppets and Men that was produced during the time of the making of The Muppet Show. Mm-hmm. If you want to have any idea of how fucking utterly wonderfully insane it was to make that show, go watch that documentary. It is 45 minutes, and it goes by in a breeze. It's pretty old, so the visual.
Yeah, the quality is going to be so far.
I think that should get remastered, though. I think they should do a sequel to it.
You know what's interesting? You know what the first movie is that I ever saw in the theater?
What? Is it?
Do you have a guess?
Is it Dark Crystal?
No.
Ooh, what was it?
Just an eyelash before Dark Crystal. Follow That Bird.
Get the fuck out of here.
That's the first movie I saw in the theater.
Oh, my God.
I know.
What was it like to see?
To see Sesame Street characters on the big screen was like, I mean, and that's the thing with we're going to go on a lot of tangents here because that's kind of our style.
Yeah.
But honestly, it's, that goes to show like how prevalent and how important the Muppets and Sesame Street characters are, because anybody who's anybody in the mid-80s cameoed in that movie.
Oh, yeah.
And frankly, even for Muppets Most Wanted, being a 2014 movie,
everybody,
they probably had the most celebrity cameos of any Muppet movie ever. Because,
and the most,
I mean,
cut, too. Because, yeah, like, that movie, fun fact, Muppets Most Wanted is almost a 2-hour movie that they
The extended cut, yeah.
This is something that they never do with Muppets. They never release extended cuts, which I'm like, oh my God, can you imagine all the deleted scenes from the last fucking 8 Muppet movies that they've done? If they had extended
I don't even need extended cuts. I need outtakes. I need everything. Exactly. I need alternate everything. I don't even need more. I just want to see everything that 100% played out. Oh, God.
But with Muppets Most Wanted, there were so many cut out. When I go back and I look at it, I was like, oh my God. Usher was in that fucking movie. A bunch of Disney Channel stars got cut out of it. I think Ray Liotta is in it, but I think like very, very
not
briefly.
Well, that's why Danny Trejo's in the second one, because he had a scene in the 2011 movie that got cut out.
Yeah.
And it seems in the trailer and it's hilarious.
Yeah. Are you the Muppets? Yeah, yeah. Wanda Sykes is the fucking...
Yeah, she's the cop. The guard. Yeah, she's the guard.
Because that's the thing, is like, you hear the Muppets and you're like, oh my God, Yes, like you want to go work with
them. Did you ever hear Danny Trejo tell the story about doing you must have.
Don't fucking
I'm not gonna get
it's okay. It's beautiful.
It
speaks to that, to how much those characters mean to people. I'm not gonna get emotional. Danny Trejo's mom had passed away. I think his mom.
You are. I'll tell it.
No,
I can see
okay.
You.
Okay. I can do it. His mom had passed away. And it was during the filming of Muppets Most Wanted?
Yes. This originally titled The Muppets Again.
Which you can hear in the movie.
An awesome title. I think that would have been so funny.
You still hear it in the opening number.
In the opening number. It's The Muppets Again.
Which they were like, we couldn't.
Disney, we're not sending you a check for that.
By the way, they said that they couldn't rework it. I'm like, The Muppets Again, The Muppets Most Wanted. Like, they could have made it work. It would have been janky, but that's The Muppets.
I mean, even the idea that the fact they left the song as it was, I'm fine with.
Yeah,
it didn't spoil.
How
the movie
about
for me.
The Muppets know. Again? And then they just don't.
Yeah, so, and then it's not called Muppets Again.
Yeah,
literally, then the title comes up: The Muppets Most Wanted.
But yeah, so
which is
filming,
almost Muppety in itself, in its own way. It's like, we're gonna call the movie this. No, you're not.
No, you're not. Very, very last minute and stupid.
Yes.
So I'm like, I like that title though. But
you know what aged best from that opening song? Until Tom Hanks agrees to make Toy Story 4. And people were like, holy, when Toy Story 4 was announced, they're like, wow, the Muppets called it. And they sure did.
I mean,
a good 5 years before.
Yeah, it was five. So honestly, it was probably in development by the time that they fucking called it out. Think about it.
If that.
Pixar.
It may be. They were probably mapping out, like outlining Toy Story 4 and what it could be.
Yeah. I'm glad
but
for the laugh because now I'm not going to cry.
Okay.
So,
yes.
Trejo.
So Danny Trejo.
So Trejo.
Machete.
Machete, badass motherfucker.
Yeah.
His mom died in the middle of making The Muppets Most Wanted. Mm. And Steve Whitmire, who was Kermit at the time, which is a whole other fucking discussion.
Yeah.
Goes up to Danny and with Kermit.
He apparently
goes,
was cold to everybody. People were offering sympathy and I'm sorry, damn. So when he came back to set, he was very reserved and just not. You know, he wasn't trying to be a dick, but yeah, he was in his feelings, needless to say.
Yeah, because Danny Trejo is known for being a nice guy, and especially on a Muppet movie, it's like, Danny, what's going on?
Yeah, like a dream job for him.
Yeah, he had loved the characters.
Yeah, yeah.
And Whitmire brought Kermit up because they had found out why he was acting so weird, and mm-hmm. Kermit said, I'm so sorry about your mom, mm-hmm. and I'm sorry for your loss.
Mm-hmm.
And Trejo broke down and cried.
He did. He told that story on Howard, actually, and it was great because it's like...
And you know what was cool about that? Howard didn't make fun of him.
No, not at all.
No.
Not at all.
And I know Howard will joke about a lot of stuff, even some stuff you shouldn't. But, like, I think even then you kind of understand.
I am going to email you an awesome bit where he rips into Steve Whitmire for messing up the Kermit gig. I am going to send you that. Because he's like, you've got a dream job. Why would you look? Because you know that Howard wrote to the Henson Company as a teenager to be a puppeteer, right?
What?
You didn't know that?
Howard Stern wanted
to be a Henson puppeteer.
Wow.
You didn't know that. Teenage Howard Stern. Yes,
I don't follow Howard all that much.
You're fired. No. Really though, he did. Like he was into puppets and everything. I mean, like we've all kind of fumfered around and tried different things as far as performing and kind of what's your thing? You know, as you're finding your rhythm, you try things. He was into puppets as a teenager and wrote a letter to the Henson Company and got, see, now that we're talking about it, I can't recall if he got a letter back from Jim Henson. He definitely got one from the company, at least. Maybe it was a letter from Jim Henson thanking him for submitting, but not, I mean, he was a teenager, so he wasn't going to get hired anyway. I mean, the only person who got hired like fresh out of high school was Frank Oz.
No, Richard Hunt.
Oh, did he?
Richard Hunt
okay.
was like right out of high school.
That's true. Yeah, he was young. Yeah, for his whole...
Like, that's why,
most
like...
unfortunately, most of his short life.
That's why Sesame Street is... That's why his characters are more known there.
Mm.
So, because that was his first starting out as a performer.
Ah, gotcha.
The Muppet Show came later, but Jim had already knew he was a seasoned performer and flew him out to London for the rest of that.
Nice.
But, yeah. So...
But, yeah, so... Everybody's influenced by the Muppets, even Howard Stern.
That's wild. I had no idea
think about
Can
how.
Can you imagine the alternate reality if Howard Stern was a fucking Muppet performer and branched off and did his own thing?
I can't even imagine. I mean, I feel like it
how
would.
Fucking crazy.
It's weird. You know, we got to make it like a multiverse. You know, the multiverse is big right now.
I like this multiverse thing.
I think we need to do like a Howard Stern's, like an Avenue Q type thing that Howard does with Muppets. Cause I'm like, what a, And it's one of those things you look at and you think, wow, that could, yeah, because that could have been a whole other branch of reality.
Yeah.
Where it's like Howard Stern becomes a Muppet performer out of high school, never goes to Boston University and becomes a, you know, gets on the radio. And then who knows how that shakes out,
like,
right?
Now I'm like having a crisis. I'm like, who would he have played? Like, I know Muppet characters are very much their performers, but like,
we don't know. Like, that character doesn't exist. Because they're so that performer.
They're
so much the performer. Yeah, so we don't know. It's completely hypothetical. I think we got an Adult Swim show.
You know what I think would have been hilarious? There was a very small character on The Muppet Show, a journalist. I forgot what the fuck his name was, but he was very, very slimy. He was very, very funny. He was supposed to be the one guy who was trying to get like the TMZ style scoop from the Muppets like every week. This was like an earlier season character.
I can't name the name because
all the performers hated him. But now I'm like, in that alternate reality,
maybe
Howard Stern was that character,
the smarmy
and
journalist,
and that character would end up becoming a part of the Muppets.
Dude, I would. It's fun to like imagine that, and I really like. I kind of want to do like a what if, Cape what if, like after the Marvel series, you can watch Cape what if, and we'll work on it. We'll do an animated thing.
Oof. But yeah, friggin'
stories we wish happened.
But yeah, you said also that you had seen Follow That Bird in theaters.
Yes,
and that was for me. That was a thing where I was like, oh, I love, because I also remember seeing Elmo and Grouchland in theaters. That
right, which would have been your time. Yeah,
yeah, that was more. That was definitely.
I was
my
too
era.
Cool.
You were
at
too
the
cool.
Time. Yeah, I was in high school. I was playing guitar by that point, so the Muppets were a distant.
They were a distant thing.
At the time, well, as what happens as you get into being a teenager and you kind of leave all that shit behind, you know, that you liked as a kid. I mean, I remember kids making fun of, it's probably like third or, let's say it was like 1990. So like third grade, maybe fourth grade, mm-hmm. making fun of a friend of mine for like, he was always talking about what a great movie Top Gun was. And it was only 4 years old at the time. And they're just like, oh, you like old movies, like Top Gun. Like, I remember them literally making fun of this kid, Jeff, who I was friends with.
I would have fucking...
In elementary school. Meanwhile, these same guys now are probably like, they're doing a Top Gun sequel, bro. You know, they're probably all over it.
These same people probably had girlfriends who thought The Breakfast Club was amazing.
Maybe, yeah.
Which it is.
Or Pretty in Pink.
And by
like
the way,
a movie from the same year as Top Gun.
No, I'm not dissing those movies. I'm just like the idiotic... nature of the comic.
That's being a 10-year-old kid.
Yeah.
You know, they're all idiots. We all were, and they currently all are. That's just how it is. But
which is a shame, because I think it's embraced more now that, like, because I don't think I really lost sense of my love for these characters over the years. Like, I mean, of course, when you're in middle school and high school, you don't talk about it as much. But when I was a teenager, I found out you could work for the Muppets if you tried.
Mm.
Like if you did the right steps, if you did the
right
things, you could.
There's a job there.
Yeah. And for me, this was when I really started to experiment with puppetry, because I'm also a performer. I know how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a part where sometimes I wish I had kind of stuck with it more, because now I don't consider myself as much of a puppeteer as I used to, where I now know how to direct puppets. And that's a whole other skill set.
Yeah.
So It's interesting, because I think if I just cared a little less about what people think, I think I probably would have been working for the Henson Company by now.
Mm.
And I'm not like mad about it. I'm like, I think creative paths, you never know what you could do. I think if I just, it's a cool what if.
Right.
But yeah. Those movies, those characters, they mean the world to me. And when I found out that it could be a job, I was like, sign me up. Like, anything Muppets, like reading materials, like scripts, is something that I'm always on the lookout for, that I can't really ever find all that much.
Like, I have a Muppet movie script that's a reprinted cover with everybody's autographs on it.
Really?
Yes. That I got out of Amoeba Music in Hollywood. Yes. The Muppet movie. I can't find it. I don't know where it is. When I moved back here from California almost 3 years ago, it went in a box, and I don't know. And it's with my scripts for Blazing Saddles and Lethal Weapon 3 and a couple others. I mean, I saw it, and it was in a case. And I was like, oh, my God. I mean, just having the Muppet movie script, period, like a sanctioned draft of the script.
Let's be honest. The Muppet movie, the very first one, is a perfect movie.
Yes.
There are things in it that shouldn't work, but they do.
Totally.
Like, it's one of the simplest plot, but when you I think when you look at it and you realize, oh shit, this is Jim Henson's story.
Yeah.
That, like, this is an allegorical version of Jim Henson's story.
Which has become my story. I've had to embrace, especially in the, since moving back to Jersey, it really has been. I mean, it kind of was. I joked about it going out to California, but considering I didn't develop some troop of people, you know, the friends I had, unfortunately, are kind of still there, and I'm not really in touch with them anymore. So,
you know what it is that's, I think that's what also the Muppets really kind of captures with people, is that they make you believe the best in the situation that you're in. Because the Muppets were a group of performers who were put on a show that sucked in a low down run theater, but they did it every week. Didn't make the rent all the time, but they did it. They were friends because of it. And that sense of friendship for me is also what makes the Muppets so wonderful, because that's also what I expect from my friends.
Totally.
I, like, me and my friends will bicker in real life all the time, but so do the Muppets. Like, that's how you know you love somebody. That's also like, I know I can make fun of my friends, like make fun of in the sense of like, ha, you fucking dickhead.
You're right. Like, bust balls.
And I knew that because of the Muppets. Like, I don't think I would have picked that up through social cues. Of course I eventually would have, but like, I think I had a better understanding of it.
Right. That I don't love you any less because I'm busting your chops.
Yeah, exactly. And that for me, that's why, we were talking about this before the show. That's why The Great Muppet Caper to me is one of the coolest scenes in any Muppet movie. And it's literally just the Muppets driving, hanging out.
Yes.
And it's them driving to the...
They're going to the Dubonnet Club.
The Dubonnet Club. That's more of a supper
club. Not a restaurant. That's more of a supper club.
Yeah, well, I tried to tell him that.
Don't blame yourself. We're just gonna do the radio play of the Muppets, everybody.
But that
without
scene,
puppets with two dudes.
But that scene for
two
me,
grown men.
That scene for me, like, epitomized just homies and friendship. Like,
totally just, walking out, and the worst situation, as we were talking about before the show, the idea of like, hey, I'm walking out with my date, and here are all my friends. Like, yep.
This is who
you got to meet all these idiots who I call my friends. This is the family I've chosen, and here they are. It's bringing every woman.
Oh, and the backseat's quarantined.
Date. Yeah, exactly. They don't have to play this loud. Oh, it's okay. They don't mind.
But for me, like, because now that's a Friday or a Saturday night with my friends.
Totally.
Hop in the car, blast music, tear up the streets, just hang out. Mm-hmm. And that's what I always wanted to do. And one day I was hanging out with some friends. We did the exact same thing in that movie with a pickup. And people hanging off the sides. Almost. And I looked back and I was just like, oh my God. Like, this is what I've always wanted in friends. And this is amazing.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's,
well, that's why I end up kind of putting Muppet, I mean, you know this from just this last year. I'm kind of putting everybody into, like, their personalities, matching them up with Muppets. Because everybody, they kind of fit archetypes in one way or another.
Yeah. Everybody's got a Muppet that they can relate to.
Yes, exactly.
If there's one that many.
Yeah.
There's hundreds and thousands?
Definitely hundreds. I don't know if they're if you're including like minor ancillary characters who popped up on screen once.
Then yes, there's thousands.
There's thousands. But like for developed characters whose
hundreds.
Names you know who've appeared in more than once. Yes, it's hundreds for sure.
So everybody's got one. You think mine is Rolf.
I do. The piano playing. I feel like the wit. A lot of it is like the smart assery, you know, the bellhops look like rats. You should see the chambermaids. Like that to me is a reaction, like a response you would give, which is fine. Like, and I'm Kermit, not just the wide eyed enthusiasm, millions of people happy, which here's a fun thing. Now, most people listening to the show weren't following the show in 2015, most. And I'm just being realistic about that. So when I started doing Cape, it was Cape 32 was the first show I did, Skid Row Studios in downtown LA, the now defunct Skid Row Studios. And that's where beginning each episode with some kind of quote or line from something, that's where that came from. And because it was the first live show and it was the first thing, cause it was a live stream that went out like before that kind of was a thing. I mean, you can only view it on the studio's website, but still I was like, okay, I'm doing a live show. I've been podcasting for, you know, at that point it had been
a while,
over 6 years. So over 4 years. Yeah. Because it's beginning of 2015. Yes. Anyway, because I was now doing it in Los Angeles, I start out with that part of the beginning scene of the Muppet movie with Kermit and Dom DeLuise. You know, Hollywood? That's right. Did you say Hollywood?
Read my lips.
And then
Hollywood.
And then just to edit it down, just forgot, you got talent, kid. Singing, telling jokes. You get your tongue fixed. Who knows? You make millions of people happy. And Kermit, millions of people happy. And then the music kicked in. Because I'm like, I can't think of a better way to open me doing a show from Hollywood, a place I never thought I'd live. I never thought I'd move out of my parents' house. And now I was living in Los Angeles for the second time. I just said, there's nothing that suits this situation better
than
that moment. And the idea of, because we're all, I mean, granted, any kind of creative pursuit, it generally is, it's usually not noble. It's usually fairly selfish. Anything we're doing, we're ultimately doing for us, mm-hmm. and we hope other people like it.
Yeah.
But the idea of millions of people happy, making millions of people laugh, entertaining millions of people, like that still does, underneath all of our selfishness that's and whatever what it is we're doing, that's
do.
What we would aspire to do. Like, if this gets out and this entertains people, like, that's the ultimate for
that's
me.
That's why the one fucking negative comment is always the one that sticks out the most. Totally. You can have a sea of hundreds of amazing comments.
Praise, yes.
And then you see one and you're just like, fuck.
Yeah.
And you just dwell on it.
Yeah. So, or it's like the one person in the crowd is not laughing. Like, a stand-up comedian always focuses on the one person who's not laughing at the jokes.
Plus,
even if the whole room is laughing.
Plus, you know, it was also the Muppets also painted this picture of, you have a chance if you put yes. the work in, which is true. And
yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
And of course, the honest truth is that, yeah, nothing in entertainment is guaranteed. There's no guarantee that I'll fucking end up making a movie one day that is Hollywood produced.
Yes.
But like, the Muppets at least made it known that it's possible, but you have to put the work in.
Totally.
Like, it was.
You actually have to be good enough, too.
Exactly.
Like, that's part of it. That's another thing. And having spent all in.
I don't even think that much into it, too, because think about some of the people who are considered talented now.
Totally.
Because it's like, oh.
But those people tend to burn out quite. Like, they tend to go away as quickly as they came in. So there is
see,
that.
That's
very
what people thought about
float.
Jackass and look where we're at.
Yeah, with like a decade and a half in between movies. Sure. But while everybody sobers up. But. There is that part, like, and this is 8 years of Los Angeles talking. This is a lot of, you know, I'm a cynical East Coaster and a jaded former LA transplant, so I hate everybody. That's important. And I'm looking at it as there are a lot of people who just don't have the talent and don't have the ability to do it. And and I'm not saying that in a way of putting anybody down. It's just like, you actually have to be good enough to even get the chance.
Yeah, like your because work you has to ultimately, be good, but yeah. you have to know how to get through that door.
Yes, because when the opportunity comes, if you can't deliver, it's over before it begins.
Yeah.
And that's the part like people don't.
That's the part people don't really click with. They're like,
right.
They're like, why don't I just go? I'm like, because if you went, you would crash and burn.
Yes.
And hate the world for it.
Yes.
I'd rather you hate the world now. And do the work.
Well, that's why I'm sure I pissed a lot of people off during my time Uber driving in Los Angeles to keep myself afloat because entertainment work doesn't come easy, folks. And I would say to people, what?
I thought you were going to say something else. And I just, because you brought up the Uber driver.
No, what I would say, because I would drive a lot of people just moved into town, obviously, didn't have a car and whatever. And, you know, we talk about their story or something. Now, granted, when I moved back to LA for 2012 to 2018, it was for voiceover and for radio and for stuff like that. Like, that was the goal when I was going out there, mm-hmm. primarily anyway. Like, that was the kind of, I thought that would be the foot in the door to everything else. But because I've been podcasting and because of, you know, I've done classes and stuff like that, I said, okay, I think this is within reach.
Yeah.
I believe I can do this. Let me try. And better to be in proximity. Anyway, so I've been out there grinding away at that for a while, and I didn't start Uber driving until 4 years later in 2016 when I had no choice because I had rent. That rent was not going away, and my landlord did not care how I paid it, so I started Uber driving. Anyway, I would drive a lot of people who would come out there, and they'd say, like, I just moved here. You know, I figure I'll give it 6 months, and, you know, if nothing happens, then I'm just going to head home. And I would say, listen, don't even unpack your suitcase. If you want to come out here and you're only going to give it 6 months— like, things aren't going to happen. It's not. And if you expect, like, things will open up because you came here, that's not how it works at all. Like, nobody knows you're here, and they won't know you're here after 6 months.
Yeah, exactly.
And I'm not saying that to be, and I would tell them, like, I'm just being honest, not saying it to be a dick, because I would say, like, look, I've been out here for 4 years. I'm a voice actor. I've been working at a lot of stuff. It's like, you can't get anything done in 6 months. Like, maybe somebody can, but probably not.
Yeah.
Like, but don't expect it to be you. Don't think you're that lucky. And I'm sure a lot of people didn't like hearing that. But the reality is, like, no, you actually do need to give a chance. Like, you need to establish a beachhead for yourself and try to lay down some roots. Like, if you're going to do this, you need to really try to do this. Like, if you want to go home and be big fish in a little pond, if you had something good going at home, then go home and enjoy that. Because it's hard. It's hard being out here. Because
I'll be honest, so, like, that's kind of the thing I'm experiencing now. Mm-hmm. Where and I'm not ungrateful for that. Like a lot of people in the East, like in this area, know me mm-hmm. like as a creative. Like,
right.
Because I did, for those who don't know, I did some songs for Thomas and Friends. So some people think that was cool. And then who my dad was and my lineage and all right. that stuff. Which, by the way, is not a step in the a foot in the door. That's a lot of people
no.
think like, oh, just because your dad was famous,
no,
like that means that you're going to be famous. I'm like, absolutely not.
No, not at all.
Half of the world doesn't even know I exist.
Exactly. Like, and nobody's going to stick their neck out in this business either. No. That's the other thing. No one's going to be like, well, I'm a fan of your dad's music, so clearly I'm going to take a chance on you. No.
No.
That's not the way things work. People assume it is, but it's really not.
And that's why, like, and this is going to be really corny, but my high school senior quote was, life's like a movie, write your own ending. Because, I mean, the truth is, in that quote, yeah, you write your tomorrow. Like, you put in the work, and there will be fruit of your labor.
Yes.
It might not be exactly what you thought, but it'll be there. And mm-hmm. for me, like, that whole philosophy is truly how I live my life, because it's like, yeah, I'm writing my ending. Like, I know how I want this to end. I know what I want in life.
Right.
Like, family, movies, like, TV. Like, that's my industry. If it's not the mainstream one, cool. I'll do it anyway.
Right. If I can make a living doing this, and that's been my goal anyway. It's like, and that's why I do the show, and that's why I, you know, write screenplays and everything. So I'm like, I'm doing it. I want to do it. I'm not going to wait for permission.
No, exactly.
If I want to do this, I'm just going to keep doing it.
If you wait for permission, that's when you're dead.
That's when you live in hope and die in despair, honestly.
Because the best thing you can be for your own scripts is your own producer.
Oh, for sure.
Because if you write and then know how to produce something,
mm-hmm.
then you'll probably get something made. Because you can, if depending on how well you actually write, because right. there's a difference between writing and then actually being good at it.
Yeah, like I said, you actually have to have the goods. Yeah,
So if you can theoretically... Because it is difficult to contact these people, mm-hmm. but it's not that difficult. We were just talking about how Howard Stern had reached out to the Muppets and Jim Henson and the Jim Henson Company. Even now, it's not that difficult.
Right.
Like, I mean, it's difficult, obviously, because they get hundreds of these wannabe writers and
right.
people who are like, I have this idea. But if you do it the right way and you have something that you think can legitimately resonate, research what a query letter is. Like, figure out how to write one of those and send it properly. Mm-hmm. Go to mixing events like that are related to that industry. Make friends. Don't make connections. Make friends.
Yes. Like, make friends. Because like, it's not about – that's another – I wish I could remember who said this to me. This is one of the – I didn't get many pearls during 8 years in Los Angeles, but this was one of them. Because everybody says, well, it's who you know. It's who you know. And somebody put it to me the right way. No, it's not. It's who knows you.
Yeah, exactly.
Doesn't matter who you know. Like, somebody needs to know you and somebody needs to recommend you for that gig or say, I know a guy who can do this.
And that's...
That truly is what it's about. But if you...
That's
why
I'm
grateful. Make friends, not to network.
Yeah.
Because that's all... That's one of the predatory things. I've gotten into this a little bit. If there was a pre-show from Cape 162, I got into this. If you're a Patreon supporter, you probably heard
it. And believe it or not, this all still relates to the fucking Muppets.
Oh, without a doubt. Yeah, we're going...
we're going more into the deeper elements of it, but that's the thing that is so cool about this world.
Yes.
Is that these characters tell you the truth, but they give you the optimism to still go out and do it.
Yes.
Like, Gonzo's a fucking starving artist
yeah.
who tries and fails every week to do
every
something.
Single time.
Fails every single time to do something cool, but still does it.
Every single time he goes and does it again.
And guess
every
what?
Every week.
Gonzo is one of my favorite fucking characters in the Muppets. Like, to this day.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think his song, I'm Going to Go Back There Someday, should have won an Oscar. And I love the Rainbow Connection,
mm-hmm.
but I think that should have been I'm Going to Go Back There Someday.
Okay. I understand why. Rainbow Connection, for me, it just always tugs at the heartstrings.
Oh, yeah, 100%. For me, that is very personal because my mom, again, when I was very, very young, there was no Google.
Mm-hmm.
I was singing the lyrics, but they weren't right.
Mm-hmm.
My mom love her to death, took the time to transcribe every word so I could sing it properly. And I love that song for that reason. But I'm going to go back there some days. And the Rainbow Connection, those are the ones that made my dad cry. Yeah.
My mom cries as soon as she hears the banjo strings at the beginning of the song. My mother starts tearing up.
Oh, my mom now too. I can listen to it now and be okay because it's gotten to that point. Because I'm also writing a short film about the recording of that song.
Oh.
So I can listen to that song and be okay. But for a long time, even now, I'll still find moments where I'm like, that catches me.
Here we go. Okay. So what gets you? Like, and it's one of the things as I've gotten older. Like, I'm going to give you an example of something that gets me now that didn't get me when I was younger because life experience.
Yeah.
Is there a line that jumps out that hits you now where you are in your life or that is just like, wow, that hits a nerve? Because for me, with just life experience and what I've gone through with my ambitions and my dreams and everything I want to do with myself, with my career, and so much of my identity is wrapped up in my creativity. Yes, yeah. In what I do. Like, I am this. And not the podcast, but everything I create is what I am. It really, like, I am the art. That was a quote I actually saw recently. And the line that gets me now that means something different, that just hits different now as an adult and with, you know, again, the experience of my
life. Which movie?
From the Muppet movie.
The first one, okay.
Yes. Is after Kermit has a conversation with himself in the field. I guess I was wrong when I said I never promised anyone. I promised me. And oh my God, that this is the first time that hasn't brought me to tears in the moment. I could feel like if I wanted to give in, I could do it right now. But it's like that is like ultimately like, yeah, I did tell myself I was going to do this. I did tell myself I was going to follow these ambitions and do these things. And it needs to, not in a selfish way, but it needs to come back to that because that's where it started. You can't do it for everybody else. I mean, you can and say, I want to do this for the people.
You can sing and dance and make millions of people happy.
Right.
But it has to
start with you.
Yeah, you have to love what you do.
And that's where it comes from. It's just like, I promised me I would do this, that I would do these things with myself, that I would create and that I would, you know. So that, dude, that hits me now
fucking
so much more than it ever could have as a child. But like now, like, yeah, anytime I watch that movie, like I just subconsciously, tears start running. Are you tearing up already?
I was.
Not trying to do that to you. Sorry, no, I'm trying to hold it together
like, listen,
myself.
Man, like, that's how much these characters mean to me. Like, I mean, I'm open with that. And I'm not ashamed to be upset or, like, be happy about that. Like, I mean, I think that's one of the greater things that the Muppets also teach is empathy. And that's what I think of all things is lacking. So that's why I'll raise my kids on the Muppets.
Right.
Like, that's why I hope people will truly let their kids watch Sesame Street. It's not just some liberal bullshit agenda. It's literally like, this is just them giving you the building blocks to be a great person.
To be a good person. Like, it's not that crazy.
Forget Dem, Republican, forget all that. It's literally just being a good person.
Yeah.
And that's why it hits me so much, man. Like,
right.
And the line for me, I mean, life's like a movie, write your own ending is the one for me that, like, yeah, I could say that and not think about tearing up. But the one now upon recollection is the Muppet movie, Kermit stands up to Doc. Because we don't see Kermit's family, and I'm not really all that close with mine outside of my immediate unit.
Mm-hmm.
I found a whole bunch of friends, and that makes us like a family. And it's weird because I've never thought about that. In relation to the Muppets, I thought about other quotes that like are powerful to me. For me, it's like life's your own.
Life's like a movie, right? Your own ending.
But like, I never thought about it until this moment where I was like, yeah, that's it. Because that's how much I love my friends. Like they mean the world to me. Like because I was really, really picked on a lot at growing up and. It didn't make me a great person to be around for a very long time. Like, I was a nice kid, like I tried to be, but because I was picked on, I was just always in defense mode.
Mm-hmm.
And then with this group of friends, it was like I could let my guard down. And that happened in high school where I was like, oh, it's okay to be the artist. It's okay to be Gonzo.
Right.
So that's why it was like That's why it hit me so hard, because there's actually a part of the show that Chris partially cut out where I actually bawled for a second. So I have to apologize for the if there is a chop there. But yeah,
there might be an edit, and there may be some blackmail involved.
All right, now we're gonna get down to business here.
Yes.
Top five Muppet songs. We'll do those first.
Oh, man. I mean,
and this can encompass Sesame Street, Muppets, Fraggle, or if you want to limit it just to.
I have to limit it to Muppets.
Yeah.
Because we'll be here all night.
Yeah.
We already have been here.
That's fair.
We've been here a while.
I did ask for five songs, and I just listed, like, what, four franchises? I
know, yeah, like, you're spreading it out over all of them. Like, are we going to include Labyrinth, too? Because we'll just be here for a long time.
Oh, man.
In no particular order.
No, because
then that'll take
order.
Even longer. Okay. For the sake of brevity, Rainbow Connection.
Okay.
For sure. Oh, God, there's so many. Can you picture that?
So two from the first.
Yeah. I'm saying goodbye, which
God
makes
damn it.
I know. And that song gets me. That's another one. Again, the older I get, it's just like, oh fuck that song.
Fuck that song.
Fuck that song. Because it's so good.
It's so goddamn good.
Yes.
But it's like, it's so fucking depressing.
Yeah. When you've said goodbye to enough people, it hurts. It does. Oh my God, that song. I'm going to go back there. I want to go back there someday. It's so good.
All right. Would it be easier to ask you what you don't like?
Muppets from Space, because it's not a great movie and has zero original songs. I'll say that. Muppets from Space is not a good movie. It's just not. That's also my teenage years. Not a lot of creative, like the Muppets were kind of creatively out of gas at the time. So I was at the age where there wasn't a lot of Muppet stuff to kind of hang on to anyway. So
I think that era is interesting for the Muppets, like Carol. Well, continue with your list and then I'll do mine and then we'll go back to that.
Yeah.
Because that's the whole thing.
The I don't know the exact name of it. Is another one.
Oh wait,
it was from the Christmas. It was from a Christmas toy, and then it was in Muppet Family Christmas at the end.
Old friends, nude friends.
I don't know what the actual.
I think it's called "We'll Be Together."
Is it "We'll Be Together" like that?
We'll be together.
I love that song. In part, because it ends the greatest Christmas special ever made, and I love me some peanuts. And Charlie Brown Christmas is great, but it. A Muppet Family
Muppet
Christmas
Family
just
Christmas.
Has it all over that. It's just, it's the best Christmas special ever.
For me, Muppet Family Christmas has that peaceful element that Peanuts has, but that punk rock attitude that the
it
Muppets
does.
Bring
it's
to
the,
it.
The chaos that is the
they
Muppets.
They have my favorite version of Jingle Bells ever made.
The Jingle Bell Rock version?
Yeah.
With the Electric Mayhem? Yeah.
Because it starts out so peaceful and sweet and then just turns into nonsense.
It does.
And I'm like, thank you.
Man, it's kind of a tie between One More Sleep Till Christmas, and then Scrooge's song at the end of Muppet Christmas Carol. I can't think of the name of that either.
With a thankful heart.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, thankful
it's kind of tough because those two, it's like it starts the movie, and I do, that is my tradition every year. I do watch Muppet Christmas Carol every year.
You know what's really funny?
What's that?
Four out of five of those songs are Paul Williams.
Of course they are.
Sorry,
I believe
Joe Raposo.
Yeah, I mean, if we're going to include Emmett Otter and Labyrinth and everything else, like, forget it. This list is going to get, I can't do five.
No,
period.
I got you.
But it may have to be One More Sleep Till Christmas, because it sets up that movie as great as the finale is with Scrooge finally, you know, turning around and everything. It's like,
yeah.
One More Sleep Till Christmas. And I usually try to watch that on Christmas Eve because I'm a sap. So,
but that's such a good movie to watch
it's
before
the,
Christmas. Man.
Hands down, it is
it's the
best,
best
version. It's the best adaptation
of the Christmas Carol.
A Christmas Carol.
So those.
So
songs.
Yours. Okay, so
also,
your five.
I wanted to make the point that I would have picked Thankful Heart because I think that song is one of the ones that Paul Williams really enjoyed writing because the Muppet Christmas Carol was the first movie song and score he had written after getting sober.
Right. Yes.
Because he also hadn't worked with the Muppets since the first Muppet movie.
Mm-hmm.
And between that, he had had a load of drug problems.
Yeah.
And I think Thankful Heart was like a thank you type of
treat. Yeah, that probably came from a different place than the typical.
Because it's crazy. I remember someone had recommended this. And they were like, listen to those songs from the perspective of someone who's lost everything.
Right.
And I'm like, oh my fucking God. And I was just like, oh my, especially when the love is gone, that one song that got cut from
that got inexplicably cut, which is on the Disney Plus version though.
Fuck they Katzenberg.
They added it back in though. I don't know if you know the streaming version has that.
I know they did.
Okay.
But eat shit, Katzenberg. That shouldn't have been cut. You know it. You wanted to cut fucking.
I get why.
Under the sea. You wanted to cut a very good song from A Little Mermaid. I forgot. Part of Your World.
Really?
Yeah, he wanted to cut Part of Your World. He thought it was slow. It is, but that's the point.
That's the song. That's Ariel's song.
I know he makes some stupid decisions sometimes.
Wow.
But this is the same guy who did Quibi. Yeah, so I don't really.
Yeah. So clearly, bad decisions are a thing. There's a pattern.
But yeah.
Your five.
My five is Rainbow Connection. Moving right along, I can listen to, like, and it puts me in a good mood. But I'm going to have to tie that with...
Oh, cheater.
Well, you did it.
I did not.
You did.
I had to do with this or that, and I chose One More Sleep Till Christmas. You set the number at five. If you want to make it your top six Muppet songs, it's game on.
Fine, it's top six. So I'll stick to the five.
Come on, Rainbow Connection, moving right along.
It is the Rainbow Connection, moving right along.
Has to be. I'm going to go back there someday. Because
yeah, I'm going to. Well, you know what? Actually, I'll sub out moving right along with I'm going to go back there. Hey, a movie.
I do love that. That's close for me.
I'm number one from Muppets Most Wanted.
That is a funny song. I will say, I give you everything you want. I love that song so much. I watched that scene so many times.
For me, that song is is peak Muppets. It's one of those moments where I'm like, if they'd just ridden the wave of that for a little while longer, like, because when you watch that scene too, it's technically amazing.
Oh God, yeah.
Like that's something that Jim had dreamed of doing.
Mm-hmm.
Like that type of puppetry. Because you watch that scene and you forget Constantine's a puppet that has to be operated by people. And they do it so masterfully that you forget that there's probably a shit ton of green screen out of there.
Oh, yeah.
And it, like, oh my God, that song. But,
See, Muppets Most Wanted, and people were kind of surprised when I said this, but I said that is the closest to those first three movies, the Henson-era Muppets, that they've gotten since.
Oh, yeah.
Muppet Christmas Carol notwithstanding because he was involved, but that's also kind of its own movie because it's not based on an original story.
Yeah, Muppets Christmas Carol and Muppets Treasure Island are like, they live on their own island.
They're based on existing works.
Honestly what I think they should do again. I think they should
should adapt?
I
like think Muppet they, Great Expectations?
No,
like Piggy could be Miss Havish Ham, that kind of thing.
That'd be cool, but I mean, I think that if
Robin
they were
can
to
be Pip.
Yeah, I think if they were to bring those characters back again for a theatrical format, one, I don't want it to go straight to Disney Plus. Mm-hmm. I feel like that's like the new direct to video.
Yeah.
And I really, the Muppets don't deserve that. They deserve they to don't. Be seen in theaters. The Muppets look their best in 35mm. I'm not even kidding. Like, think about it. Like, the Muppets look the best on film. Like, right. I love the last two Muppet movies, but when the Muppets are shot digitally, there's like, it looks a little weird.
Yeah.
That's my own weird critique. But other than that, great.
Well, I'll say I still have those moments. And now last night, the day before we're recording this, was the 40th anniversary event for Great Muppet Caper. So I went and saw it in the theater. We were supposed to go as a group, and unfortunately it didn't work out because they didn't show it locally. There were 10 or 12 of us.
Really?
Now, there were two showings on Sunday. They showed it at 3 and 7, and then Wednesday night at 7. So there were three different shows. And it's one of those things where you kind of... I take a moment to say, now, these are puppets. Try to think of it that way. Like, I'm looking at Kermit, Miss Piggy in Lady Holiday's office... And you can't look at them and not see characters that are alive.
Yeah.
As much as you can try to look at it as these aren't people. You are watching puppets, even though you're just seeing them in the frame. Try to not imagine that these are living characters. And it's impossible. And it's funny. I was talking to somebody today, a story from my friend Dan, who worked for the Henson Company, but in like the licensing department in the late 90s.
Wow.
So like 95, 98
what
to that era.
Decade.
Yeah, well, that's it. And that's, he actually said, like, creatively not the best, but profitable. Like, that was the interesting thing about that time. He was like, is this pre-Disney? Like, is this, he backed out of buying the Muppets after Jim Henson died because they didn't know how much potential there was.
They were, to be fair, that deal they were constructing was very special.
Mm.
Like, if Jim hadn't have died, I think that could have been on par with what Disney did with Lucasfilm. As far as, like, the freedom that he could have got. Lucas walked away. But if
he did,
but if Henson, I don't think was planning on walking away. I think Henson was setting it up so that the Muppets had a forever home, which they do now. They are part of Disney.
Right.
So that he could then go off and do other things because he loved those characters, but he was like.
Well, he also didn't want to handle the business. That was the other thing. Like he loved the creative part. He hated the business part. So he didn't want to have to worry about the business elements of it.
So if he
could just go create, which is the funny thing.
The Jim Henson biography. That came out.
Brian J. Jones. Yeah. Yes, of course.
There's moments in that book where he's specific. Like Jim hated talking about money.
Yeah.
And everyone around him was like, dude, you got to give yourself a fair deal. The dude literally was like financially awkward. And mm-hmm. I'm not like saying that as a diss. Like it's like how I am with money when it comes to creative stuff. It's like, I feel bad, but it's like if someone asked me how much it would cost for me to make them and like, cause I have a show called Anderson Harbor.
Right.
If someone asked me how much it would cost for them to get an episode, if someone wanted...
Could you produce a stop motion something for me?
And they asked me how much it would cost, they'd probably be gobsmacked at how much I would ask for it because of how much of it is handcrafted, how much I do.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel bad. But like Jim would literally be like, when he would produce interstitials for Sesame Street, he would mm-hmm. just be like, just give me what you think I need.
Right.
And it would never be enough. He would always
of course.
Pick into his own pocket. So that deal, it was to do that. It was to have the business just there so that he could just go to Disney and be like, we're going to make a Muppet movie. And Disney was like, fine,
go
do it.
Go.
Which I wish that that was the case.
Of course. I mean, everybody wants that deal anyway, but the idea that that was
But Jim
the potential
was so was like, close. Jim was so
I
close
know,
to doing it.
I know. It's
And it was rough. The deal was like the actual negotiations were rough.
Mm.
I don't think it would have happened immediately. I think it would have probably been another 2 years.
And that was part of what, you know, they contribute is declining health to stress over the deal. I mean, I'm sure you saw probably the PBS American Masters. Of course.
I'm just.
It's a lot.
I try not to be biased over stuff like that because at the end of the day, I don't know.
At that level, we can't. I mean, that's such rarefied air to be at that place anyway. That you have no idea the machinations of a deal like that and what, how much is involved.
Because people forget, and many passive fans don't really know this, because people be like, oh, I like the Muppets. People don't realize how much of a phenomenon they were in the 70s, 80s,
and
even early 90s. Like, they were everywhere. You know what? 60s onward. Because Sam and Friends and all the late nights.
Yeah, popping up on all the variety
they
shows.
Were everywhere, dude. They were. So this was a big deal. And Disney had never acquired characters like that
before. Yeah, this is before that was a thing. This is before Disney bought up everybody. This was a very new idea.
Yeah, this
because Disney, mind you now, this is prior to the Disney Renaissance in the 90s where the animated features got back on track. Like, Disney was not in a great place at the time either.
No.
I mean, Little Mermaid, the triple threat of Little Mermaid, Beauty and the Beast, and Aladdin, that's what brought Disney back.
Yeah.
And then sealed with that, Lion King. But it was like, it was missteps like Black Cauldron, which I enjoyed. Another movie I saw in the theater. I saw it at Radio City, actually.
Wow.
I know. Random, right?
I saw.
But there were.
And
like
Bugs
Fox
there.
And the Hound. Did you really?
Yeah.
Huh.
I remember the curtains opening up.
Yeah.
And I remember being really like, cool. That's the movies. Like, for me, like, that moment
was
like, that's my expectation.
Did you ever go to the El Capitan, the Disney Theater in Hollywood?
No.
Oh, dude, we'll work it out.
Anyway.
So Dan worked for the Henson Company back in the 90s
shit,
for 3 years.
Holy shit, that was intense.
We went a long way out
but
of the
But it's
way.
All related.
It is
it's
all related.
It's all related.
So to get back to the characters, now, he said one of the highlights for him, aside from getting a workshop tour, he said the two biggest highlights were a workshop tour, number one. Number two was Frank Oz actually came and spoke. And now they didn't expect anything.
90s.
This is 90s.
So Frank is kind of
he's outside of the Muppets and everything.
You know, like, he didn't even perform his characters in Muppets from Space. Aside from Miss Piggy in a few key scenes,
mm-hmm.
Fozzie was performed by Kevin Clash.
Mm-hmm.
And Piggy was performed by, I think this is the beginnings of Erica Jacobson. But
I'm
like,
sure.
I think
from Space I've seen
literally,
like twice.
Literally the performance
I know the least about
was
it.
Someone else. And
they gave us Pepe.
They
gave us Pepe. That's the only thing I could say good about Muppets from Space.
Which is,
Which
well,
is, which
well
is
he
great.
Came from Muppets Tonight.
That's true. But that was my first awareness because I didn't have the Disney Channel. Yeah, Disney, put Muppets Tonight on Disney Plus, would you please?
Yeah.
Anyway,
that's the
because everybody loves that show. That was the next, like, that kept the Muppets in
it
there.
It could have focused on new Muppets that no one gave a shit about.
Well, no, that I understand that criticism of the Jim Henson Hour. Yeah. Where they're like, who's Clifford? Who's Digit? Like, I understand maybe that, where they're like, we don't know these characters. Give us classic.
Well,
ones.
The new ones are,
but I liked it.
Tonight are funny. They're cool,
right.
But like in the 90s where that nostalgia wave is really starting to at least bubble.
Yes.
It should have
been a little more balanced.
Yeah, Muppets Tonight should have been Muppets Tonight, not this new crop of characters.
Not Muppets the Next Generation.
Yeah.
Frank Oz shows up.
Yeah.
Frank Oz, dude, is beat. Pulls out Grover. Now, performing Grover in the late 90s. And here's the thing. Dan is watching this happen. And he's trying to look at Frank Oz, the performer, watching Frank Oz perform Grover. He cannot take his eyes off of Grover. He said, I tried, but I could not because Grover was alive. Grover is what I was looking at. There was no attempt to separate himself from Grover. It's just, he's there. Grover's on his arm, but Grover's alive. He's like, I couldn't not look at Grover because that was a living thing. That was not Frank Oz performing a character. Grover was a living thing. And he said, I can't even describe to you how it felt. Like, I was trying to get him. I'm like, I was like, I'm using this tonight because I said, you used to work for Henson. So we're doing a Muppet oriented show tonight. Do you have anything?
He should have been fucking on.
I'll ask him if I can.
Muppets part two.
Yeah, it'll be a recurring thing.
This is something that can keep going.
Oh God. Yes. Like, I'm surprised it's taken this long. I mean, I love it though. I do. And that's why I was like, we could talk like crazy about all of this stuff, which is going to be
fun. We were joking we were going to be here till midnight, but we were wrong. It's only 11:30.
That's right. We only sat down 2.5 hours ago. And,
how much of this is getting cut out?
Enough. Enough. Listen, if you're a Patreon supporter and you want to hear the whole thing, maybe you'll get the uncut version, but this will probably get edited down a little bit, and not just because of
not just
the sobs. But anyway, if you like all this nonsense, of course, you can support the show on Patreon, patreon.com/CapePod. You can get some exclusive bonuses, some pre-show nonsense, and there's a bit of it from this one. And as there usually is, as Christian will attest, there's pretty much usually, the standard is about a half hour before we actually start the show.
Which
there's
was a new record. We only got started in 20 minutes today, so that's a new one.
22. Yeah, that's pretty good.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Pretty good. And you can get those perks. Of course, subscribe to the show if you haven't already on the podcast app of your choice. Subscribe to the YouTube channel, 2 to 3 clips a week going up on the YouTube channel, 2 from the current episode, and then usually a throwback clip as well on Thursdays. And if you like Christian's nonsense, you could follow him on Instagram at Christian Cordes, on Twitter at ArcadePlayer1, and also at Christian Attrell.
Yeah.
Professional and personal accounts. You can follow me on Twitter at Chris Abalo and on Instagram at Chris Sells Out. Follow the show at Cape Pod on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. And once again, subscribe. Rate the show, give the show 5 stars, write a little review on the podcast app of your choice. Help spread the word. That's what it's all about here. And watch all the Muppet stuff you can on Disney Plus to send a message to them that we want more. And
more of that stuff, less of Muppets from Space.
Yeah.
Still a fun definitely. Movie. But first introduction to funk. That was mine. Anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, this was awesome.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And this will happen again.
Oh,
more
yeah.
More and more.
Muppet history, reach out.
That's right. And get you on, man. You're going to be on here. We're going to talk to you about Muppet fandom and all sorts of good stuff.
This is a good
and,
one.
And once again, as with every Monday, the show will be back next Monday. So until then, for Christian Cordes, this is Chris Abalo, and this was yet another experiment. I hate you.